Looking forward, she would like to expand into new areas and regions of Florida. She's also putting together a pitch for a TV series called What's in My Yard, which she hopes will help educate people about the native and invasive species in their backyards. For every problem, there's a riveting solution. Critical factor. No one wants poisonous toads in their yards, but who wants to deal with the problem? This woman, apparently. Side Hustle Labs. Where do ideas come from? One of the most valuable skills you can learn is the art of generating viable business ideas. Once you acquire this skill, you'll have no trouble identifying potential profit centers. In fact, this is the easy part. You'll spend far more time on making your ideas come to life. Ideas can come from observation, paying attention to the world around you, perhaps noticing something that could be improved. Problem solving, making lists of problems and brainstorming solutions in the form of products and services. Asking questions, looking for the reasons, stated or subtle, for why people spend money, and deciphering what else they might buy. And experimentation, just trying out whatever comes to mind. As you listen to this book, notice which stories you identify with the most. Then see if you can think up another way those people could make money. Before you know it, you'll be on track to generating all the ideas you could ever need. For more on this topic, visit sidehustleschool.com/ideas. Chapter 3. Use the skills you already have. Don't go back to college. Use what you know now. The people featured in this chapter's stories used a skill they already had to make extra money. Sometimes a lot of it. Yoga teacher cleans up with home organizing business. This Seattleite found a new passion in helping people declutter their homes, but little did she know it would make $4,000 a month and touch the lives of hundreds of refugees. Lisa Holtby has built an entire career around side hustles. Since 1993, she's been teaching yoga, writing books, running seminars, and hosting weekend health retreats, all while being an active mom. But toward the end of 2016, she decided it was time for a change. She'd always had a penchant for helping people organize their spaces, and doing it never felt like work. As Lisa herself says, it's how I play. So after attending a Seattle taping of Gretchen Rubin and Elizabeth Kraft's Happier podcast, she went home and felt like she was born to be a home organizer. While getting set up, Lisa also began to volunteer as an English as a second language teaching assistant at her local Refugee Women's Association. After meeting some amazing and courageous people, she felt the need to help these women and their families transition into America. That's when her two passions collided to form the perfect side hustle. Lisa would offer decluttering services to her clients and donate the unwanted items to the refugees who needed them. She would essentially become a modern-day Robin Hood, only without stealing from anyone. It would be as fulfilling as it would be enjoyable, and Lisa got straight to work. She began her home organizing business with a $2,200 investment from her savings account. For $1,400, two designers helped her create a website and show her how to modify and optimize it for search engines, and then $300 went into the site itself, which she hosts through WordPress using the StudioPress Genesis framework. The remaining costs were liability insurance, business cards, and a signature red bucket that she takes to every client's home. Lisa began promoting her service through the network of people she'd built through her previous side hustles. She was met with an enthusiastic response. They loved the idea of improving their own well-being and donating stuff they weren't using to people who would benefit from it. The concept itself helps Lisa create a lot of word-of-mouth marketing. She offers every potential client a free one-hour consultation to talk through her process. After that, her services are priced at $65 per hour, with a three-hour minimum. She's able to charge a good hourly rate partly because of a unique system that she's developed that she calls SPACE. It stands for sort, pare down, assign, contain, and establish. The system is designed to coach clients through the process of decluttering. During the first year of the project, Lisa earned an average of $3,000 per month, which increased to $4,000 a month a bit later. A quick glance at her testimonial-filled website shows why. In short, her clients love what she does and speak highly of her work. One of Lisa's clients, an attorney, had her organize most of her 4,000-square-foot home and all of her daily working processes. This made her feel lighter and more focused, which she credits largely to Lisa's work. While her clients gain clarity, the resettled refugees gain items and essentials that they couldn't otherwise afford. For example, an Iraqi family split up and fled their homes after refusing to join ISIS. Somehow, they found safe passage to America, were granted refugee status, and were reunited to build a new life. Expecting a child in the coming months, they came to Lisa for help finding a crib and some baby clothes. Using donations from her side hustle, she put together a box that included a portable bassinet, baby blankets, diapers, almost new infant and toddler clothes, picture books, baby toys, and a leather diaper bag. Because of her new work, she's able to make a donation like this almost every weekend. If you're thinking of doing something similar, Lisa says that research and preparation are vital. Going into someone's home to help them declutter is a deeply personal experience and should be handled with care. It's also important to get written reviews from clients that you've worked with that can be shared on your own website, as well as third-party sites like Yelp, Google, and Nextdoor. This can be a big driver of web traffic, and it helps to back up your services with social proof, a powerful factor in converting someone to a customer. Lisa hopes to find volunteers to help her distribute the donations door-to-door to reach more families and better manage her own workload. In her words, this is the work I was born to do. Critical factor. The pain of a messy, cluttered house is real for everyone, but Lisa's financial success can be traced to her decision to focus on wealthy homeowners. In addition to having larger spaces to organize, they're also more easily able to spend money on services like hers. Houston beekeeper creates multiple swarms of income. After multiple career moves, this Texas woman found her dream job as a beekeeper and cheesemonger. What's all the buzz about? Keep listening. The landscape of Houston, Texas, America's fourth largest city, is known for Beyonce, NASA's Johnson Space Center, and an impressive number of monster truck rallies. But until recently, it was not known as a thriving hub for bees. In fact, there was no beekeeping service anywhere in the city, and this was a crisis. Why is this fact so buzzworthy? Well, honeybees play an important role in the environment. Among other contributions, our food supply is dependent on the pollination they provide. Even small towns typically have at least one apiarist collective, but the Texas metropolis was a beekeeping laggard. With this service, a beekeeper is essentially a property manager of bees. Similar to a landscaper or swimming pool service, the beekeeper visits the beehives regularly, removing honey for sale while inspecting the bees to make sure their hive is humming along. That's where Nicole Burgers, our queen bee, enters the story. Nicole discovered beekeeping while working as a search engine optimization specialist and as a cheesemonger. Through her job in cheese, Nicole had seen customers turn up their nose at honey varietals that just weren't local enough. She also knew local beekeepers that were giving their honey away because they didn't know how to market it. She started an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign called B2B Honey Collective, with the mission to provide a healthy, sustainable habitat for honeybees while promoting urban beekeeping. This isn't just a mission or an unusual hobby. It brings in a lot of sweet cash, especially during the high season. I asked Nicole to show me the honey and tell me more about how it worked, and she said, "Mind your own beeswax." So I had to dig into the hives myself. Not really, she was actually very helpful. Her income varies depending on season and number of clients. Clients pay a set fee of $600 for a new hive and starter set of bees. They also pay a monthly fee for Nicole to visit and care for the bees. During that visit, Nicole withdraws the honey, which she splits with the client, taking 35% for herself. She then resells that honey to local retailers, distributors, and customers in her own Honey of the Month Club. In other words, she's created multiple swarms of income. At the time we last spoke, she managed more than 70 hives. From all the different ways this busy bee gets paid, she earns more than $7,000 a month. All of that income takes the sting out of the startup costs. Nicole withdrew $5,000 from her retirement fund to get going, and her Indiegogo campaign raised an additional $13,500. She's quick to point out that her work is not all about eating cheese and honey, although that would be awesome, but she also has to do accounting, scheduling, and manage the real risk of being stung by those ungrateful bees she's trying to serve. Still, she loves being able to go outside each day and do something for the environment while raising interest in protecting the local honeybee population. Because one side hustle is not enough for people like Nicole, she's also busy with several other projects. She rents out a room in her apartment on Airbnb, she's helping a professor friend launch a tabletop game, and she does events for a local cheese shop. If you're bumbling about, searching for your side hustle hive, let this story serve as inspiration. Critical factor. Bzzz. Beekeeping services are good for local areas, and Houston didn't have a well-coordinated one until Nicole traded part of her retirement fund for an apiary. Apiary means beekeeping collective, by the way. Fun fact. This story has an action plan. Here we go. Step one, identify an unusual, yet important, need that's currently underserved in your local area. Step two, learn how to meet that need. In this case, beekeeping. Step three, tell your story. Use crowdfunding to raise funds and recruit supporters. Step four, hunt for landowners who will allow you to install beehives on their property. Lastly, step five, collect the honey each month, sell it to wholesalers, and deposit your sweet profits. Brooklyn photographer gets paid to throw confetti at people. A former graphic designer turns a 90-day personal challenge into a growing photography brand. A graphic designer by day, Yelena Oleksik specializes in creating presentations for startups and other companies. But for the past 2 years, she's devoted much of her spare time to The Confetti Project, a photography series that profiles its subjects doused in confetti, all while asking the question, what do you celebrate? For as far back as she's been working, Yelena has had a side hustle. Her first job out of college was being a startup's first hire as lead graphic designer and project manager. After roughly a year, she began freelancing and continued that on the side until she found herself longing for something new. The Confetti Project began as a 3-month challenge to find new opportunities. Yelena tackled her own limiting beliefs about whether or not she could truly become a full-time photographer, publish a book, or even see something through from start to finish. Since she started, she's now profiled over 200 people and has seen it transition from a passion project into a money-making brand with multiple revenue streams. How do you get inspired to launch such a project? It all began when Yelena started immersing herself in lifelong creative hobbies. Then a series of random events happened. After getting glitter bombed at a party and taking home some confetti in her pocket after a concert, Yelena found herself fishing around in the pocket of her leather jacket on a particularly sad day. She pulled out the confetti and immediately dove back into the nostalgia and emotions that the confetti held. Following a bit of quick research, she decided to do 50 photo shoots with her fellow Brooklyn creative entrepreneurs, design a book, and then make it a bestseller. Although she didn't meet all her ambitious goals in the initial 3-month deadline she set, she laid the groundwork for a successful side hustle. Once she completed the shoots with her friends, Yelena introduced her first revenue stream, paid photo shoots featuring confetti. These shoots started at $200 and are now $350 per session, bringing in $1,000 to $4,000 a month after expenses like studio rental and, of course, confetti are covered. The income fluctuates because demand varies month to month. On the surface, Yelena isn't doing anything groundbreaking. She's taking photos, telling stories, and throwing confetti. But when it's put together in her unique way, that's where the magic happens. The 2 hours she gets to spend with each subject is where she's most in her element. Next, she plans to completely transform the Confetti Project into a brand with more individual shoots and charity campaigns, and to finish the coffee table book she started in her initial 3-month challenge. Critical factor. Yelena had a fun idea and expressed it with passion. Since the project is so visual, getting a few initial shoots done with her friends helped with recruiting paid participants. Excel spreadsheet guru earns $3,500 a month. An IBM employee in India creates a series of Microsoft Excel tutorials, earning hundreds of dollars per sale and thousands of dollars each month. For over 3 years, Sumit Bansal worked as a marketing manager at IBM in New Delhi, India. His work in data analysis and client presentations required him to use a lot of Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoint. Naturally, he got really good at it. Sumit started a blog, which is now his full-time job, because he wanted to share answers to questions his colleagues were asking him about spreadsheets. When he got a positive response from those colleagues and a few friends, it gave him more confidence that his blog was useful. Then he began to write tutorials and create videos each week. He signed up for Google AdSense, where he would get paid when website visitors clicked on ads. This wasn't an immediate gold rush. His first few months, he earned only a few dollars a month. Traffic grew and the payouts increased, but not by much. It wasn't until a year and a half after starting the blog that he found a real way to make money, by creating online courses. Within an hour of sending the email announcing his first course, he got 5 sales. The course title was as basic as they came. He called it Excel Course. Yet as basic as it was clear that he was onto something. Those first few sales affirmed his faith in the blog he'd worked on all this time. He celebrated by taking a few friends to dinner, buying himself some books, and then getting back to work. That was 4 years ago. Sumit now has 3 courses for sale, that basic Excel course, which sells for $127, an Excel dashboard course, $297, and a Visual Basics for Application course, also $297. The courses don't all sell every day, but more often than not, at some point during the day, he'll get a notification that either $127 or $297 has arrived in his bank account. Not only that, he often gets positive feedback on how the courses are helping people do better work. He recently read an email from one of his students who mentioned how he used the technique shown in the course to create a dashboard. That employee received a standing ovation in a department meeting. Another student emailed him to say that the course helped her move from contract employment to a full-time job. One of the reasons why Sumit's courses work so well is because he's intentional about what goes in them and what doesn't. Many similar training programs don't cover all the necessary topics, or they end up overwhelming the student. Sumit took a lot of time to make sure his are structured in a way where he includes the essentials without adding anything unnecessary. From revenue of around $4,000 each month, he now makes about $3,500 in net income, a large amount of money in India. He has $700 in monthly expenses, including rent in his co-working space, some important subscriptions, and his email marketing tool. Next, Sumit is focusing on creating two new online courses. He's also been able to start a different project with a friend, using earnings from his blog to get it started. Check your formulas. The spreadsheet hustle is thriving. This story includes an action plan. Step one, identify a tool or resource that your colleagues spend a lot of time using, preferably one that can be tedious or difficult. Step two, learn shortcuts, tips, and strategies for improving workflow or saving time. Step three, write down what you've learned in a logical, orderly manner. Focus on what's essential and don't try to pack in everything. Step four, decide on a format to share your ideas. Online course, blog, product, video series, or something else. And step five, package the lessons and offer them for sale. British man builds terrariums for fun and profit. An avid plant collector makes the most of temporary unemployment by launching an online terrarium store from England. 25-year-old Adam Chafee has always loved plants. Born and raised in the concrete jungle of London, he sought out all things green wherever he could. When he was a child, he was fixated on cacti and usually had several with their arms raised in salute around the house. As a teenager, he moved on to carnivorous plants, collecting Venus flytraps and displaying them on his windowsill. Then in his 20s, he migrated toward the more peaceful tomato plant, also known as the tomato plant, at one time cultivating 12 different varieties. His house is now filled with 100 of those tomato plants, in addition to bonsai trees and other treasures. In those teenage years, while researching how to tend his plants, Adam had come across terrariums, geometric-shaped mini greenhouses that people use to display their plants and decorate their homes. They're fairly popular now, but back then they were much lesser known. They looked more like reptile tanks or clear plastic pots, but they achieved the same goal, improved humidity for growing the plants. Fast forward to 3 years ago. Adam had just graduated with a master's degree, but was initially unable to find work because of a turndown in his industry. In the downtime in between applying for jobs, he was also looking for a terrarium to hold his plants. He had seen so-called geodesic domes online and in shops. Researching further, Adam learned that you could make your own glass dome using pre-cut glass triangles and silicon filler. It's called the Tiffany glass technique, and it uses copper foil to create three-dimensional stained glass shapes. Adam's interest was piqued, and with extra time on his hands, he decided to attempt making one. After about a month of toying with different approaches, he succeeded. His friends were so impressed by his creation that they encouraged him to sell the terrariums online. He tried his luck by posting one on Etsy, and after a few weeks, much to Adam's surprise, a nice lady from across the ocean in the United States sent a message and put in an order. It was a transcontinental match made in heaven, or at least an exchange of PayPal funds. Adam wrapped the finished product in layers of bubble wrap and sent off his first sale. He celebrated with a pint at the pub and a trip to the nearest stained glass shop to buy some new tools. He was already set up on Etsy, where his first customer, and soon many others, found him. He now invested about £500, or $642, for materials and tools, and created a website using Shopify. Adam offers customers something a bit different from the mass-produced offerings by providing terrariums that are soldered rather than metal-plated. He uses lead-free solder and is constantly changing his methods and materials to perfect the finishing on his containers. To reflect this attention to detail, his handmade products cost slightly more than those that are mass-produced, typically ranging from $45 to small ones to $115 for large ones. After that brief time of unemployment, Adam was able to find work and now has a 9-to-5 job as a marketing assistant. He enjoys that job and has continued to work on geodesium in his spare time. So far, he's sold over 100 terrariums, averaging about £600 or $830 in monthly income. Though he uses Facebook and Instagram to feature his products, most of the current traffic comes from Etsy. He's also making some changes. With each terrarium taking between 3 and 4 hours to complete, the project can be time and labor intensive. With an eye on the future, he's expanded to sell kits for filling terrariums, which include soil, gravel, activated charcoal, and moss. The kits have since become his best-selling items on Etsy, and they take far less time to make than the terrariums themselves. A future goal is to expand to craft markets throughout London. Let's see what sprouts next. Critical factor. Adam's love for plants and skill at craftsmanship complement each other well. By selling online, he can extend his local reach beyond the United Kingdom and serve customers worldwide. Rocket Scientist launches herbal side income. Herbal medicine isn't rocket science, but this NASA scientist discovers a side hustle when she turns to non-traditional remedies to treat her immune diseases. By day, Lisa Akers is a real-life rocket scientist. She frequently travels from her home in Colorado to build spaceships, most commonly at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Her side hustle is more grounded. She promotes the message of herbalism, working with private clients suffering from autoimmune diseases and other chronic conditions. The project stemmed from Lisa's own personal health struggles. As a result of the long hours, high stress, and not-so-non-toxic chemicals, as she calls them, that are used in spaceship building, she found herself with some systemic health issues that doctors couldn't figure out. She spent the better part of a year going to various experts, specialists, and even some non-traditional practitioners to try to find a solution. But it wasn't until she found an herbalist that she was able to figure out what was happening and work to improve her health. While she was healing her body, Lisa decided to learn more about herbal medicine. She worked to get her Master Herbalist certification and eventually completed postgraduate education in nutrition. As a busy scientist, Lisa was happy to be able to complete many of her certifications through distance learning. She'd download the lessons on her phone and do coursework while waiting for appointments, traveling, or during her lunch breaks. At first, Lisa hoped that herbalism would become her main gig. She hired coaches, found mentors, and took classes, all in hopes of following an herbal dream. But she was making those decisions while recovering from serious illnesses of her own, so she wasn't in a great frame of mind to see how she could change her workflow at her day job to feel better. After starting down this frustrating path, she realized she could both keep her day job and have an herbal business. This is the side hustle school way. Lisa's first offering was a group program, and it completely sold out. She soon realized, however, that group programs are difficult for health practitioners to manage. Keeping confidential health information private was difficult in a group situation. It was challenging to tailor the content to meet the participants' needs while protecting each person's privacy. She now prefers one-on-one consults, where she can speak more directly and customize suggestions for individuals. The cost is $450 for an initial appointment package and $250 for follow-ups. Lisa works with clients in six areas: nutrition, sleep, movement, environment, stress, and joy. This approach helps them build a foundation of good health before working to restore their energy and specific nutrients in their bodies, as well as to build resilience. For example, in one of her programs, she'll do a personalized review of lab blood tests and give her clients detailed insight into their results. This is much more informative and empowering than the call from your doctor where all you hear is, "Your lab work is fine." When working with clients, Lisa makes sure to tell them to see their physician if there's a situation outside of her ability to manage. She's not a doctor, so she can't diagnose or prescribe treatments. She sees herself as an educator, offering information and insight to help people find a healthier lifestyle based on her own experiences with plants, food, and supplements. Lisa also has access to a larger herbalist community where people can share their tough cases and get insight from one another. To promote her programs and consultations, Lisa does talks and web classes, reaching out to people interested in learning more about holistic approaches to their health situations. She also goes to groups where people who have autoimmune diseases gather, both in person and online, to participate and build relationships. When appropriate, she'll let them know what she does and opens the door to future conversations. It cost her about $5,000 in educational expenses to get certified. She's now bringing in a minimum of $1,200 a month with a goal of increasing it. Her work in building spaceships ebbs and flows. Sometimes she's busy with assembly and testing, and other times she's not. She schedules appointments when she's got time and mental capacity and starts a waiting list when necessary in order to avoid overcommitting. While she's helping spaceships take flight, she's also helping people get well and building an asset for herself. Critical factor: Lisa's personal story and double life as a rocket scientist gave her authority as she transitioned to the world of wellness. Oncology nurse creates products to regrow hair. After kicking cancer to the curb, a Texas oncology nurse discovers the power of essential oils for hair regrowth. Tanika Randall's story is all about growth. Growth she's experienced in her personal life, in her professional career, and even with her hair. Tanika, or T, as she's more commonly known, started a side hustle selling natural hair products that promote healthy hair while also stimulating follicle growth. T brings professional and personal experience to this venture. She works as an oncology nurse, often pulling 12-hour night shifts from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. A self-described healthy hair junkie, she had begun experimenting with making her own products after being less than thrilled with everything else on the market. Those products were full of lots of questionable chemicals like parabens, sulfates, formaldehyde, and artificial colors. Not only that, the results were unimpressive. She wanted more natural products for her hair, and she also enjoyed putting these products together. Her experimenting was put on hold, however, when a bone marrow test revealed that T had leukemia. She was a fighter and pulled through the treatments cancer-free, but 5 rounds of strenuous chemotherapy left her completely bald. Dismayed but victorious, she began to research the best ways to naturally regrow her hair. That's when she discovered the world of essential oils. Much more so than artificial ingredients, the right recipe of essential oils made an immediate difference in her hair's regrowth. She tried a series of combinations before settling on her own unique recipe. Naturally, T shared her newfound knowledge with her friends and family so they could benefit from her research. As her hair regrew, people kept asking what her secret was. How did she get it to grow back so thick and healthy after chemo? One day, it dawned on her that she was creating products that others might actually want to purchase themselves. Better yet, her target audience was right there on Facebook. On a whim, she decided to take the plunge and begin accepting orders. The response she received was overwhelmingly positive, and she knew that she'd be outgrowing her impromptu Facebook sales page before long. With this in mind, T went online to do what she does best, researching, so that she could put this positive momentum to work. She set up an LLC, limited liability company, and the next month she attended an event as an official vendor. That event was a local women's networking group. As she describes it, "I made a few $100s at that first event. While that's nothing to some people, to me it was a lot." And more than just making some money, she saw that there was a real market for her products. T took that first few $100s in revenue and put it right back into her business. In total, she spent $1,500 to get going. Around $800 went to buying ingredients and supplies directly related to creating her products. Another couple hundred went to registering her business, and the rest went toward flyers and business cards. She also set up a website so that she could officially take orders on her own instead of just through Facebook. The investments paid off. In her first year in operation, T cleared more than $20,000. Aside from spending a few $1,000s on additional ingredients to prototype potential new products, she had very few expenses. One thing she did invest in, however, was business coaching. She spent $3,000 to get some help learning how to run her own shop. While it's the single largest thing she's purchased in relation to her business, she said it was worth every cent. From that business coaching, she learned to focus on what her customers were asking for, which led to introducing some new products, as well as bundling existing products into sets. T also learned more about connecting with potential customers. When she picked a name, she had grabbed accounts on most major social networks, and then set about establishing a presence on many of them. She also joined networking and entrepreneurial groups in her area. Through all these efforts, she cleared $80,000 in sales in her second year. In her third year, she wasn't able to focus on the business as much, but still cleared $45,000. T is continuing to grow her presence on social media and is now working on being more targeted. She says that until recently, she was a bit all over the place, trying to be everywhere at once. Now, she's narrowed her focus so that she can be consistent in a way that combines promoting her products, teaching, and sharing more about her own journey. She eventually hopes to turn this work into her full-time income. She's already put much of her profits toward payment on a house for her children to grow up in. There's no splitting hairs. As someone who moved from apartment to apartment growing up, this was a tremendous accomplishment. Critical factor. As T's hair grew back thick and healthy, her friends and family wanted to know how she did it and what products she used. When they started asking if they could buy the products she was using, she realized an opportunity was right in front of her. Animal lover breeds rabbits to pay for college. An enterprising teen learns to breed rabbits, pocketing an extra $500 per month and eventually paying her way through college. When Leah Lynch was 16 years old, she was juggling a retail job around her high school studies. Like so many teenage jobs, the work was boring. Making minimum wage was better than nothing, but this was hardly her dream job. Still, what else could a teenager do? One day while researching alternatives, she stumbled across a peculiar breed of rabbits called French Lops. As Leah discovered, they weren't just bred for pets, they were bred for shows too. These are some talented rabbits, she thought, and she decided to try her hand at breeding them. She'd been an animal lover her whole life, so it seemed logical enough. Looking at local listings, she found a breeder in her part of Ohio. Then, armed with money she'd saved from a retail job, Leah hopped in her car and bought the best rabbit she could find. If she was going to do this right, she had to start with the best partners. Her new trio of rabbits, one male, two females, cost a few hundred dollars. Luckily, there was no need to register as a breeder or apply for a license, so she could begin building up her rabbitry right away. Oh, by the way, there's no license required, but the rabbits do appreciate some romantic music being played in the background. So I recommend John Legend or the Evenings by the Fireplace playlist on Spotify. Just a little bonus tip if you want to try breeding rabbits. She did this while working around two other jobs and eventually her college studies, learning along the way about what it took to breed these rabbits safely and to a show quality standard, then selling them for a profit to responsible buyers. To build up the business, she attended local shows and spoke with other breeders, companies, and attendees to make them aware of her rabbitry. And she used the Craigslist pages of the three largest nearby towns and cities to share the rabbits she had for sale. Sure enough, they began to fly off the shelves, or perhaps out of their cages. Now here's some math. For a show quality rabbit, you can expect to sell, or buy, one for anywhere between $35 at the lower end and $200 at the higher end. In other words, the better your litter, the more money you stand to make. When Leah started, there was a joke in her family that these rabbits would pay for her college tuition. Little did they know that joke would become reality. She graduated debt-free while also making a few thousand dollars each school year in spending money. Leaping forward, Leah has stayed with her rabbitry alongside her new job as a test proctor at a local community college. And just like her rabbits, she's multiplied into new income streams. Her website, Busy Gals Homestead, teaches people how they, too, can raise rabbits to generate a side income. Although her site was around through college, it was originally titled Leah's Lovely Lops, it really took life when she added a blog and began to charge for coaching, as well as offering herbs and natural remedies for rabbits. She's also invested more time and effort into learning how to market her products to people all over the country, leading her to make an additional $500 a month on top of the rabbit riches. Leah is a rare breed of person, taking advantage of every opportunity that comes her way. Critical factor. When Leah decided to breed rabbits, she took the time to talk to everyone she could find who knew something about the industry. She then got the word out about her new rabbitry through those same people, in addition to posting free ads on Craigslist. PR consultant launches Restaurant Week festivities. A California publicist earns an extra $20,000 a year, producing an annual Restaurant Week that brings together chefs and new diners. Elizabeth Borsting wears many hats. Based in Long Beach, California, she's a public relations consultant representing hotels, restaurants, and destination venues. She's also a travel writer with 9 books to her name, as well as numerous articles for the Los Angeles Times, National Geographic Traveler, and other publications. A few years ago, she took on yet another role, producing the city's annual Restaurant Week. For 1 week each February, restaurants produce, at a discount, special value-oriented menus reflecting their culinary style. Lunch menus are available for $10, $15, and $20 per person, while 3-course dinners are offered at $20, $30, $40, and $50 per person. The idea is to introduce diners to new restaurants, allowing them to sample from a range of featured items without breaking the bank. It's called Dine Out Long Beach, and it didn't exist until Elizabeth made it happen. She actually began the project with a co-founder who later stepped away. Plenty of other cities have similar events, but for some reason, no one had ever done it in Long Beach before. The event was ideal for her. It taps into her natural strengths, experience, and the connections that she's built while handling PR for many restaurants in her day job. The fact that she enjoys good food doesn't hurt either. Funding comes largely through sponsorship. Elizabeth is constantly networking, so most of her sponsors continue to be part of the event year after year. Startup costs were minimal, and the annual profit is around $20,000. Since she runs her own PR firm, Elizabeth's workday involves touching base with different clients, some of whom happen to be restaurant owners. She promotes the event through a large billboard, which includes sponsor logos, at a very busy intersection. She estimates that it garners around 450,000 impressions. Additionally, the event is featured on morning shows in Los Angeles, as well as on LA's number one radio station. This press coverage benefits the restaurants and helps to bring diners in. Managed properly, Restaurant Week can be a win-win for everyone. Diners love trying new places at a fixed price. Restaurants love getting new customers that they hope will return after the promotion is over, and the person who runs the operation gets paid. Bon appetit! Critical factor. Elizabeth was a connector and already knew many of the restaurateurs she'd need to rely on to make the inaugural year a success. By working with them and leveraging her PR connections for press coverage, she was then able to build relationships with even more decision makers. Side Hustle Labs. how to discover your valuable skills. Don't follow your passion, follow your skill. This recommendation can take you far, or at least get you on the right path to side hustle success. So how do you know what your valuable skills are? I firmly believe that everyone's an expert at something. Whenever I meet someone who says they have no marketable skills, a 3-minute conversation usually proves them wrong. To get started, make a list of things you know how to do. What did you learn in school, college, or university? What have you learned in the workforce? What comes naturally to you that other people seem to struggle with? All of these answers will point to valuable skills. And you may also want to ask your friends and coworkers. Sometimes the people who know us may have ideas or insights that we haven't considered ourselves. Next, you need to think about how to apply those skills in a different way than you would in a traditional career. That's what many people in this book have done, but it all starts with a valuable skill. To learn more, visit sidehustleschool.com/skills. Chapter 4, Buy Low, Sell High. This business opportunity started approximately 150,000 years ago. It's evolved a bit since then, but the principles remain the same. These modern-day merchants find ways to buy goods at one price and then sell them at a higher one. Nomadic family cooks up profits with Italian housewares. After finding the frying pan of their dreams on a year-long trip abroad, this family starts an importing business that allows them to keep seeing the world. Nathan and Catherine Spaccarelli decided they wanted a different life for themselves and their children. After selling most of what they owned and taking a year-long sabbatical from work, they'd returned from traveling with a completely different purpose. While they were proud of the coffee business they operated and everything else they built back home in Oregon, nothing compared to the rich experiences of exploring the world as a family. They wanted to be able to bring together their love of entrepreneurship and travel into an income-earning project that worked for the whole family, or in this case, something that put the whole family to work. Nathan and Catherine promised their two young sons that much of the profit from this new venture and their work within it would go into the family travel fund and give them more opportunities to explore the world. Since they were determined to create something that would allow them to be location independent, they focused on reselling, but not in a way that required them to spend hours standing in line at the post office. Through a podcast, Nathan had discovered the Fulfillment by Amazon program, where Amazon stores goods for you and then ships them out whenever orders come in. It sounded like the perfect fit. And by the way, Amazon doesn't do this to be nice. They get paid a significant portion of the sales, but the arrangement still works well for a lot of businesses because Amazon has such a large customer base. They were just missing one thing, a product. Like the savvy side hustlers that they are, they decided to capitalize on the skills and knowledge they already had. Over the 20 years they had been running their coffee distribution company, Catherine and Nathan had learned a lot about water filtration systems. It occurred to them that they could do something useful with this knowledge. It didn't make much sense for them to sell coffee filters, since companies like theirs were more likely to make their bulk filter purchases straight from the source. So instead, they started to look into filters that anyone could purchase on their own. One or two sales a day led to dozens of sales a day as they got better at managing their listings and bidding for clicks in search results. These filters served as an easy way for them to try their hand at something new, but they weren't the long-term solution. After the success of their first few months, they discovered a product that inspired them to shift focus from water filters to a different item that would allow them to build their own brand. On their round-the-world trip, they picked up a healthy, non-stick ceramic pan at a market in Italy and brought it back home with them to America. Nathan loves to cook, and even with months of use, the pan held up well. The U.S. market was saturated with Teflon pans that contain a chemical that raises health and environmental concerns. The ceramic-coated, non-stick Italian pan they'd acquired was not only a much healthier alternative to Teflon and other non-stick cookware, it could also easily transition from stovetop to oven. Finally, ceramics bake at half the temperatures required for conventional materials, so they use less energy. They tracked down the manufacturer and customized the pans to accommodate a few design elements Nathan requested, including features like a longer, heat-resistant silicone handle and a high-heat aluminum base. Since this was their first order, they went with the minimum amount that they could, but it still ended up being 1,500 units. The initial investment caused them some hesitation at first, but despite the risk, Nathan and Catherine were confident in the product. They launched their cooking line under the name Da Terra Cucina, literally translated as From the Ground Kitchen, due to the all-natural volcanic minerals used to create the non-stick coating on their pans. This new product line was a hit, with early customers writing rave reviews and the pans flying to the top of Amazon's kitchen and houseware search results. During the first year, they had to carefully consider when to place their wholesale orders. There were times when it felt like they were drowning in stock and were going to be stuck with these non-stick items forever, and times when they'd have so few items their customers would be waiting longer than they'd prefer. Finding a balance proved tricky, and it's still an art that they're trying to perfect. Still, they'd managed to make over $200,000 in sales by the end of that first year in business. Much of the money was reinvested back into the business, but they were still able to add $40,000 into their family travel fund. After the first quarter of year two, they'd already cleared $85,000 in sales, putting them on track for an even more profitable year than their last. This has allowed them to invest in more stock and grow their business by adding three more pan sizes. With so many water filters and non-stick pans in the market, you may wonder how the Spaccarellis were able to create such a profitable project. Nathan says the only secret is being fanatical about what you sell. It's easy to throw a few products up on Amazon and make a little money, but to be truly successful and stand out, you need to present a quality experience. That high standard is what Nathan and Catherine strive to reach with all their products. The rave reviews on all their products show that their customers feel the same way. In fact, here are two of their favorite reviews from thrilled customers. One of them said, "My other pots and pans are jealous." And the second one was, "Imagine replacing the jalopy in your driveway with a Maserati. It's like that." Whether this new business will ever come to replace their coffee distribution company remains to be seen. Either way, they'll be heading out again to see the world. Going forward, the Spaccarelli family plans to create their own e-commerce website, as well as expand their income streams beyond Amazon and diversify their business, all while traveling together as a family. Critical factor. Nathan and Catherine experimented with water filters, but then switched to cookware as they learned more about selling on Amazon. They were fanatical about customer service, and over time, their many positive reviews became a source of new customers. Wedding bells ring brighter if the bride's not broke. A New York professional eases some of the painful prices for wedding goods by renting high-end accessories for brides. Many childhood pursuits are lost to the past, but some take hold, transformed into an adult version of bygone ventures. Brittany Finkel couldn't foresee that planning the weddings of her three older sisters, starting when she was just 12 years old, could lead to owning an online boutique renting luxury bridal accessories. But that's exactly what ended up happening. Her path continued to unfold in college, where she got a degree in fiber science while also designing wedding gowns as a part-time job. The pressure of a last-minute request to design one sister's gown sent them both out to shop for a reasonably priced one, and that's where she was inspired. But first, Brittany was offended. Wedding dress prices were expensive enough, but Brittany expected that. What she was shocked at was the prices for the accessories, like veils and headpieces. With the dresses blowing out a bride's budget, accessory costs could send them into sticker shock stupor. And they don't need to own all those accessories. After all, they're only used once. Enter the idea. Why not supply brides with high-quality accessories that they could inexpensively rent and return? The idea led Brittany to her side hustle, Happily Ever Borrowed. She knew fabrics and quality, and she knew business dealings from her full-time job as a buyer for luxury brands. She used that savvy to work directly with bridal accessory designers, selecting from the new designs for the season from the twice-yearly Bridal Fashion Week in New York. She had to say I do to some startup costs, including about $20,000 on inventory, legal and marketing fees, and a website. But the investment paid off. The company has been doubling its sales year after year. She's now rented to over 500 brides and is well on track to earning six figures a year. The Happily Ever Borrowed website lets brides-to-be check accessories by product, designer, or style, and the range of goods runs from veils to headpieces to jewelry. Oh, and don't forget tiaras for that royal look every bride needs. Prices are generally 20% of the retail price to purchase the item, and any minor spills and damages are covered. Rentals include a prepaid label to ship the package back after the magic is complete. The company even has a send before you spend option for brides who want to try on up to three different pieces at a flat price of $50 for a two-day rental, which includes a $25 off coupon on any selected wedding rentals, just for trying out the service. Apparently, even accessories need rehearsals. A few of those 500 brides have had unusual requests, such as wanting to rent pieces for as long as a month, but that's discouraged since prices would then start to approach retail. The business isn't all champagne and toasts. Having to rely on the postal service can be harrowing because the occasional lost package can heavily impact the bride's peace of mind. Brittany has worked hard to master precise lead times for all shipments. Wedding ceremonies last only a moment in time, but they can create memories for a lifetime. Happily Ever Borrowed specializes in making those memories happen, sometimes with a crystal tiara flourish. Critical factor. Sure, a bride might keep her wedding dress forever, but does she really need to own the tiara, the veil, and whatever other accessories she wants to wear? Brittany created a rental market for expensive items that could easily be recycled by many brides. The curious incident of the $300,000 bouncy house biz. A Texas man puts a bounce in his step by finding a uniquely profitable niche. This imaginative project earned multiple six figures in its first year. Imagine someone comes to you with this pitch. Hey, I've got a great business idea. It's an underserved market, a product that people enjoy, and a high profit margin. We could make a lot of money here. You think, awesome, is this an app? I've heard that apps do well. And your friend says, no, here's the secret, and don't tell anybody because I don't want someone to steal my idea. Here's how we're going to get rich. Bouncy castles, also known as bounce houses. Seems unlikely, right? Well, one guy in Cedar Park, Texas, decided to follow his bouncy passion to the bank in the world of playhouse rentals. How in the world did he do it? Just like this. During the day, Rene Delgado works in operations and supply chain management for a large consumer electronics company. In the evenings, he sells bounce houses to residential and commercial customers. Again, you heard that right, bounce houses. Rene didn't decide to sell bounce houses because he has a lifelong obsession with them. He decided to sell them after some careful analysis. That research began when he set out to consider his side hustle options. He had a long list of ideas, using fulfillment by Amazon, becoming a day trader, and flipping houses were all on the list. But it was another idea that stood out most of all, dropshipping high-ticket items. With dropshipping, he wouldn't have to carry any inventory. The manufacturers or distributors would handle storage and shipping. And it didn't really matter what he sold. If he found a way to profit on the difference in price, from what he paid for something to what he sold it for elsewhere, he'd be set. He liked the low barrier to entry to this business. He also liked the fact that success wasn't dependent on factors outside his control, as was the case with some of the other options he'd considered. Still, it didn't matter what he sold as long as he could profit from it, but what would that be? Well, Rene made a list of over 100 possible options and included everything from toy tractors to birdseed. He then narrowed the list based on several important criteria. The average price per item was over $400. There were more than five manufacturers or suppliers. The product was hard to find in a retail store, and the level of competition for the item was low. Based on these criteria, he ended up with those bounce houses. He built a website and spent a few hundred dollars creating an LLC. Once he had the legal framework in place, as well as his spiffy new domain, bouncehousestore.com, he began calling around to establish relationships with as many bounce house manufacturers as he could. When he was approved to sell their products, he uploaded the images and descriptions to his site and then moved on to the next manufacturer. Rene launched in December and saw a few sales until the following April. Was he wrong to choose this market? Not really. He was just early. It turns out that the bounce house business is a seasonal one. Once April arrived, sales picked up and then hit a peak in June. How much money are we talking about? A lot of money. Before the year ended, Rene had taken in more than $300,000 in sales. That's right, $300,000. His tremendous success inspired him to delve further into the world of dropshipping. As bounce house demand declined when the winter approached again, he decided to start another business. This one was also seasonal, an indoor golf outlet. The indoor golf season is the opposite of the outdoor bounce house season, so the two projects work well together. Remember, Rene wasn't particularly passionate about either of these markets. The choice came down to reasoned analysis. He works in supply chain management by day, so he was good at operations. He didn't care what kind of product he'd sell, he just wanted to be successful selling it. In short, he followed his bounce to the bank. Critical factor. After making a list of 100 possible items for his first dropship effort, Rene ended up with something that met the right criteria, a high price point with low competition. High school junior earns $10,000 selling autographed baseballs. A Maryland high school student parlays his love of baseball into a lucrative sports memorabilia business. In an era of endlessly available entertainment, the fan base of Major League Baseball has diminished. Still, there's a sizable coast-to-coast contingent of enthusiasts who stake out their favorite teams, players, and spots in the stadiums where they long to catch a foul ball. Most of those fans go home without nabbing a ball, but Tim Herron gives them a chance to get on base. He's happy to sell them a brand new Major League ball, one signed by their favorite player. When we first met Tim, he'd only recently finished his junior year of high school, but he already had some serious business savvy. he'd realized that he could cheaply collect autographs and goods from star prospects in the minor leagues and then sell them at a premium when that player made it to the majors. A lifelong baseball fan and current college student at the University of Maryland, Tim had been gathering autographs for more than a decade, usually keeping the balls and other items he obtained for his personal collection. But a couple years ago, he transformed what was an expensive hobby into a self-sustaining side business. He started going to nearby Camden Yards, the practice park of the Baltimore Orioles, as often as possible to build up his collection. Baltimore Graphs, his memorabilia side hustle, came from this new hobby. He buys major league issue balls in bulk for around $12 each, gets them signed at games, and then sells them and other baseball items on eBay. He also sells on a Facebook site called Autographs 101, as well as directly through Instagram. In addition to getting balls signed himself, he buys signed balls of top prospects on the cheap from other less savvy collectors and later rakes in the cash when the players make good in the majors. Tim regards what he does as akin to a player's stock market. In essence, he's betting on a player's potential, and many of these players' share prices have gone over the fences. In his first few months of business, he made $20,000 in sales. After subtracting his costs for goods and shipping, he was left with $10,000 in profit. A grand slam home run! Tim was pleasantly surprised that people would buy his wares, and even more pleased that he could go to games with his dad, get to watch players he'd staked a claim on perform, and expand his collection. And let's not forget, he was also making real money. Tim advises deep research for anyone interested in playing in the memorabilia big leagues. Get to know the players while they're in the minors and make sure they play for a big market team, like the Yankees or the Red Sox. He suggests you buy only in small numbers at first. Then lower your risk by investing in a variety of players rather than putting a lot of money behind any one prospect. He's now working on the next phase of his venture, signing a player to an exclusive memorabilia deal. Even for a prospect, that can cost between $5,000 to $50,000. And has to be done through the player's agent once a big league team drafts him. With an exclusive deal, players only do autograph signings with the contract holder. They do several signings a year, with up to 2,000 signed items each session. This plan involves more risk, since most prospects never make it to the majors, but it seems that Tim knows what he's doing. Don't bat against him. Critical factor. Tim's knowledge of baseball allows him to place bets on players who are rising through the minor leagues in hopes of playing in big stadiums. He also sought out other forums where he could buy signed items for less than their market value. The live cricket dropshipping hustle. A Pennsylvania man sells live crickets to reptile owners, all without ever handling any inventory. Jeff Neal works as a project manager for an industrial painting contractor. He sets up estimates for manufacturing facilities, and if the company makes the sale, he sees the project through to completion to make sure all goes well. He's also a serial hustler. When we were first looking for stories for the podcast, he sent in several. Among other things, Jeff searches for side gigs on Craigslist, and in his first attempt, made more than $500. He also has a coupon site, which is interesting and could make for a story of its own. But what interested us the most was a side note he made in the survey form. By the way, I also sell live crickets to reptile owners. I've been doing this for more than 6 months, and it's going really well. Needless to say, that caught our attention. It's probably also safe to say that selling live crickets isn't something that most people would ever want to do. But wait, before we continue, here's a key point. Jeff does not receive or handle any inventory. He doesn't have an ice chest full of crickets or a drawer in his refrigerator that he pulls out whenever he receives an order. In fact, he never sees the crickets at all. He's simply a reseller for a cricket farm. He takes orders and makes a profit on the markup, but an actual cricket farm does all the shipping. How did this unusual endeavor come to be? Jeff knew from his extensive hustling experience, as well as some previous work he'd done for an e-commerce website, to look for a niche that has low competition. Crickets easily fulfill that criteria. There just aren't tons of people out there reselling live insects, at least until this book is published and there's a mad rush to compete. The greater problem was finding the right dropshipper, where a company, usually the original source, but sometimes another distributor, will handle the actual shipments. Jeff learned that there were several cricket farms in the United States that offered dropshipping. But because they use FedEx and other private carriers, their shipping rates were so high that it made it very difficult to maintain a decent profit margin. So after some digging, somewhere around page 10 of Google results, he found a small, family-owned business that looked a bit off the beaten path. He gave them a call, and they offered to handle fulfillment at a great price. They also shipped with the post office, which considerably lowered shipping costs. Doing a trial run with this business was the one and only time he actually took possession of any crickets. And it was good that he did, because he learned something important. He had them send a demo shipment, and it looked fine. He wondered if it was missing some instructions that he thought would be included. And that's when he learned an important lesson. The crickets would eat any paper that was in the box. Fair enough. He decided to send the instructions in a confirmation email after his customers placed their orders. One recent month, he had over $1,200 in revenue on 28% profit margins. Unfortunately, the next month saw a big dip in sales, which ended up at $760. He thinks the reason was because many of the reptiles these crickets are fed to were going through reptile hibernation around that time of year. Fortunately, his website began chirping with orders once the next month rolled around. Critical factor. There's not a lot of competition in the live cricket business, or at least there hasn't been until now. Hand grippers make for a $60,000 strong hustle. These married fitness enthusiasts are pressing in on the grip strength market, earning extra cash and peace of mind for their growing family. Husband and wife duo Matt and Christy Cannon are literally crushing it with their niche side hustle. The project consists entirely of selling grip strength equipment, mostly in the form of hand grippers. These simple tools are used to increase hand strength and usually involve a torsion spring fitted with two handles. Their muscular business, Cannon Powerworks, originally came about 6 years ago as a natural extension from the couple's shared passion for fitness. Stay-at-home mom Christy is a competitive powerlifter. She's been training with heavy weights for over 20 years and has competed in USA powerlifting meets. She can squat about 245 pounds, bench 150 pounds, and deadlift 300 pounds. And she's only getting stronger. Her husband, Matt, a mortgage underwriter by day, is a competitive grip strength athlete. Yes, it's a real sport. Although grip sport isn't yet widely known, its popularity is growing. Between 2010 and 2013, Matt competed regularly and held numerous world records in the 145-pound and 163-pound weight classes. He was the first athlete in a competition to close a hand gripper rated above his body weight, meaning that with one hand, he crushed a gripper requiring more pounds of pressure than his entire weight. He got his start in the sport in 2005, when he and Christy attended a bodybuilding seminar. At the pool one night, a fellow attendee brought out his set of grip strengtheners. Matt gave them a try and was instantly hooked. As a community began to organize around hand strength, the couple got more and more involved and eventually spotted an opportunity. When they began, there was just one other company that sold different grip manufacturers' products under one roof, giving customers the chance to order a range with one low shipping fee. That company ended up closing its wholesale store, and Matt and Christy figured they could fill this gap and find a way to improve upon the concept. Their improvement was that they would rate each hand gripper to determine its exact strength. Normally, each hand gripper manufacturer has its own way of categorizing grippers into strengths. Cannon Powerworks offers a service where they test the grippers for what they call pounds of pressure to close, so that those grippers can be compared in a reliable way. Customers could either send in their personal grippers to be rated and sent back, or they could just buy new rated grippers online. By the way, side note, I don't think I've ever said the word grippers more than I have in my life over the past 2 minutes. When Matt and Chrissy's website went live, the sales started rolling in right away. The couple was so stunned at how well things were going that they didn't even stop to celebrate. They just worked harder to fulfill the orders. The first year, they made a consistent $3,000 per month in profit. By the second year, this had shot up to $5,000 a month. They've maintained that level ever since, and the couple now brings in about $60,000 each year selling their grippers. Their online store offers sets of 2, 3, or 6 grippers, all from different trusted brands, that cost from $34 to $64. Their customers usually include rock climbers, power lifters, CrossFit athletes, and strongman competitors. Most are repeat customers, and new customers usually arrive through word of mouth. Startup costs were low, and anything they could do themselves, they did. They went with the least expensive website template they could find, did no paid marketing, and bought as little inventory as possible, totaling about $5,000. To photograph products for the online store, Matt watched YouTube videos and learned to make a small light studio out of household supplies such as cardboard boxes, lamps, and paper. In that first year, they reinvested much of their profits to buy more inventory. From that initial outlay of $5,000, they now have more than $25,000 worth of goods on site and ready to ship at any given time. Selling grippers has helped the Cannons pay off their mortgage and save for the future. They say the business has been a perfect way to feed their own interests while providing flexibility as they raise their 3 kids. And as it's plateaued in profits, they're now looking to flex their product line and marketing muscles. Whatever comes next, Matt and Christy have already proved their status as a power couple. Critical factor. There was only one other company selling grippers from a variety of manufacturers, and that company soon closed down their website. Matt and Christie's new site then offered a significant improvement by